Hello, lovely True Crime Dimes. You might have deduced from its title and the fact that it's a true crime podcast that the show will cover potentially upsetting content. In addition to detailed accounts of all manner of horrendous acts, this podcast will also entail the vital and varied use of curse words, BIPOC allyship, love for the LGBTQ+ community, using people's correct pronouns, and other pretty liberal shit. If any of that's going to upset you, exit now. This is Trigger Warning, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Jen O'Malley, and you've been warned. Just before 1 a.m. on Sunday, March 9th, 1980, 36-year-old Bobby and 29-year-old Kyla were married in Las Vegas. Again. The Bennetts had been married to each other before, making this Bobby's fifth marriage and Kyla's third. The wife before Kyla, Bobby's third wife, Kyla's sister. Bobby and Kyla shared a 6-year-old daughter, Charity, as well as a trucking company. Bobby secured the hauling contracts, while Kyla managed the day-to-day aspects of the business. This was the second trucking company they'd run together. Just 57 hours after the Vegas ceremony, on the morning of Tuesday, March 11th, 1980, James Robert Bennett Jr., Bobby, was found dead in the foyer of his fashionable Atlanta Country Club Estates home with multiple gunshot wounds to his head and back. Exactly 1 month after the wedding, Kyla and a part-time truck driver for Bennett's trucking company were indicted on murder charges in Bobby's killing. She was accused of hiring the driver to murder Bobby. Kyla went to trial first, and after 11 days, the Superior Court jury of 5 women and 7 men deliberated for over 7 hours before acquitting her. Kyla had told 6-year-old Charity what was going on, so immediately called her to tell her the news. She reportedly said, "Good, now you can come pick me up." Charity grew up a smart girl who skipped 10th grade and graduated high school with honors. She was also a heroin addict. Kyla kicked her out at 17. Charity recalls, "She gave me $100 and told me I could either use it to find help or to score and find a place to overdose." So Charity split the difference. She spent $50 on drugs and $50 on gas to get to a halfway house in Chattanooga, Tennessee. She got clean, but was still miserable, constantly having cravings and not understanding how people faced life with nothing to take the edge off. She made a deal with herself that if she still felt that way after a certain amount of time, she'd OD and end it all. But everything changed when she discovered that she was pregnant. Charity's son, Paris Lee Bennett, was born on Sunday, October 10th, 1993. She made him 2 promises that day. 1, to love him always, unconditionally. And 2, to be the best mother she could be to and for him. Charity credits Paris with saving her life. Paris was a charming, artistic, super intelligent kid. At the age of 13, he had a genius level IQ of 141, placing him in the upper extreme range of intellectual functioning. They lived in Alabama for a bit, where Charity met and married Jonathan Smith, and they had a daughter, Ella. She was born on Friday, April 12th, 2002. The marriage, however, didn't last, and Charity and the kids moved to Texas in 2005. Where Paris was polite and mild, Ella was a pistol. The two were inseparable. Charity's kids were her world. But life is hard, and Charity relapsed, this time with cocaine. Paris, who was 12 years old at the time, picked up a lot of the slack in caring for Ella, and Charity got clean again within 6 months. On Sunday, February 4th, 2007, the three were living in Abilene, Texas, and Charity was working at Buffalo Wild Wings. Paris, now 13, and Ella, 4, were home with their 21-year-old babysitter. So when police showed up at Charity's job around 12:30 in the morning to tell her that Ella had been hurt, she was confused. Of course, Charity wanted to be taken to her daughter right away, but police said no. "You can't go," they said. "She's dead."
"I accidentally killed somebody."
"You think you killed somebody?"
"No, I know I did. I feel so messed up."
"Is she breathing right now?"
"No." "And I was hallucinating."
"You were hallucinating?"
"Yes." and I thought my sister was a demon, and I killed her.
I want you to start CPR, okay? What I want you to do is take her off the bed.
No, I know for a fact that she's dead because
I... Do you want to go ahead and try? It might still help, okay?
No, I don't think it'll help because...
Come on, Paris, work with me.
I know I stabbed her lots of times.
Okay, Paris.
Yes?
Take her off the bed and put her on the floor.
Okay, hold on. Please don't hang up.
I'm not hanging up on you.
I thought she was a demon.
Okay.
Okay, she's on the floor, but I can't stay here because she's all bloody and stuff.
What I want you to do is I want you to put your hands on her chest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I want you to push 30 times. I want you to count.
Okay.
All the way to 30, and then blow 2 breaths in her mouth. Okay?
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Charity, heartbroken, wanted to get her remaining child the help he obviously needed. After all, his father had been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, which included auditory and visual hallucinations. But police noticed some things that were suspect. To start, they didn't believe that Paris had performed CPR, or even attempted to perform it, on Ella. Due to the nature of her stab wounds, had she been placed on the floor, on her back, and received chest compressions, a significant amount of blood would have been expressed onto the floor. There wasn't any, and she was found on her side. They also noted that during interviews, Paris was trying hard to cry, but never managed to produce any tears. In Paris's browser history, police found tons of porn, which wouldn't be that alarming for a 13-year-old boy, but this was incredibly violent stuff. Bondage, sadism, he'd even searched for snuff films. Ella's autopsy report showed cuts on her little fingers, wrists, and forearms, signs that the 4-year-old had fought for her life. The report also showed that she'd been tortured, beaten, strangled, and stabbed 17 times. And finally, semen was found on Ella's bed, on her body, and in the shorts Paris was wearing that night. He had sexually assaulted his little sister. Charity could no longer hold on to the story that Paris had invented. She confronted him, telling him she knew that he was lying and that he'd killed Ella on purpose. Paris got quiet. Then there was this whole shift in his demeanor, Charity said. It was like this whole other person took over. He just started laughing at me. He said, "Well, it took you fucking long enough." It turns out that Paris had watched hours of violent porn the night of the murder. He'd then somehow convinced the 21-year-old university student babysitting him and Ella that she could go home, which she did at 10 p.m. without contacting Charity. Paris lost no time in getting a knife and entering the room where his baby sister slept. His stabs were slow and methodical, not frenzied, not an uncontrollable rage, Charity writes. Not all were deep. Most were shallow jabs and punctures. He told the detectives he stabbed her and pulled the knife out slowly, that it felt like stabbing a mattress or a marshmallow. He sexually abused her that night, and he admitted the more violent he became, the more excited he became, ending in death for her and climax for him. After he'd murdered Ella, Paris called a school friend and reportedly had a calm chat for about 6 minutes. He waited an additional 2 minutes before calling 911, pretending to be in a panic. He also pretended to administer CPR, putting the phone down and walking away to count. He then challenged Charity. "You always said you'd kill anyone who hurt one of your children. So what are you going to do now?" In an interview with Piers Morgan, Paris Bennett admitted that initially he wanted to kill his mother, but then decided to kill Ella, noting it would be the worst punishment he could give his mom. "For many years, there was just this hot, flaming ball of wrath in the pit of my stomach, and it was directed at my mother. And one of the reasons why I chose to kill my sister and not someone else is because I knew that by doing that, I could hurt my mother in the worst possible way, because I had always known, as a child, that the most devastating thing to do to my mother would be the loss of one of her children. And I found a way to take away both her children in one fell swoop." People blame Charity. Surely Paris had been abused. Surely he'd been neglected. Surely there'd been warning signs. And while he wasn't abused nor neglected, there had definitely been red flags. When he was younger, he'd bang his head against the wall until it bled. There's video footage of Paris roughly shaking a baby Ella, making her hit herself in the face with her own hands when she was still an infant, pretending to choke her when she was a toddler, and asking his mom if her least favorite phrase would be killing Charity's children. Once, when he'd been scolded for breaking a toy of Ella's, he grabbed a knife, waved it around, and then ran out of the house with it. His mother and grandmother chased him down, and he brandished it at them, but they finally managed to get the knife away. Charity took him to Red River Hospital, a psychiatric facility, to be evaluated. He was discharged a week later, and here we come to a contradiction. There's at least one article that states Charity didn't get the report from Red River until after Ella's murder, when it was added to Paris's record. But in the documentary, The Family I Had, Kyla claims that Charity knew what the report said and chose to remove Paris from the facility anyway. When the interviewer asked Charity about it, she doesn't say whether she knew or not, only that it wouldn't have made any difference if she'd committed Paris. She claimed her only regret was relapsing, saying, "I believe there's a moment in all our lives when we realize our parents are human, that they let us down, and we become disappointed. I believe that was Paris's moment with me." In any case, the evaluation stated that Paris was obsessed with shooting and killing, and that he also had homicidal and suicidal ideations. For Ella's sake, Charity wanted Paris to be punished for what he'd done. But for Paris's, she wanted him to receive the lightest sentence possible and to get the help he so desperately needed. In the courtroom, she was torn over which side to sit on. A bailiff got her a chair so she could sit in the middle of the aisle. Paris was sentenced to 40 years, the maximum he could receive as a minor. According to an article in the San Antonio Courant by Michael Barajas, at first, Paris wasn't vocal inside youth lockup. He expressed himself only through letters and pictures. Soon enough, he began refusing to follow simple directions. He punched a peer several times in the face on the basketball court. The boy never fought back. Later that month, he flooded his room and then lunged at staff that responded. Officials scolded him for making demeaning comments to his younger peers. Paris also hacked into the computer system and had been corresponding with literary journals in New York City. While one evaluator wrote that Paris appeared to be genuine in many of his statements during treatment, when discussing his offense, he was smiling. This causes some concern. Staffers reported numerous times that Paris tried to manipulate them into giving him his mother's address in San Antonio, where she moved shortly after the murder. She did not want him to have it. I'd like to note that the last part is contradicted by the fact that in The Family I Had, there are literal piles of letters from Paris to his mother and his half-brother Phoenix, who was born in 2012, that he mailed directly to their street address. Charity wanted to keep the promise she'd made to Paris to love him always, unconditionally, but has repeatedly been torn on how to do that while still loving and honoring Ella. She's almost cut ties with him twice, once when he filed for emancipation, which he later withdrew, and once when she read a letter he'd written to one of his counselors. In it, he talked about murdering Ella in vivid, troubling detail and about his deep resentment toward his mother because of her drug use. Charity visited Paris shortly after that. In the San Antonio Courant article, Charity recalled, "There was a little girl nearby who had come to visit her brother. Their dynamic reminded me of Ella and Paris before the murder. I broke down crying and asked Paris why he didn't just kill me." To which he replied, "God damn it, Mom, just get over it already. It's been almost 2 years. People die all the time." He told Charity that killing her would have put her out of her misery, but this way, she'd suffer forever. He enjoyed her pain. Writing for Good Housekeeping, Charity explained that she sees her son as a predator, likening him to a shark, unable to be anything other than what he is. Even so, preparing a statement advocating for Paris to fulfill the remainder of his sentence in an adult prison was the hardest thing she's ever written. She told Michael Barajas, "I truly feel my son is dangerous, and that if he was released, I'd be in danger, or somebody else could get hurt. But at the same time, I knew what prison meant for my baby. I knew there's the possibility someone will hurt him because his crime was against a child. I knew he might not survive, and I was helping send him there." Paris has attacked his mom during their visits. Several experts have advised Charity to change her and Phoenix's identity and go into hiding before Paris is released from prison, as her son is a sociopath. Despite that, She allows Paris and Phoenix to communicate via phone because she wants to teach her youngest child unconditional love and forgiveness. As I mentioned earlier, Paris has written piles of letters to Phoenix for him to read when he's older. Charity says that she monitors their interactions closely. She explains, "What I know about my son is this. He is sick. He couldn't care less that he sexually assaulted and murdered Ella. He has a dark side that is dormant right now, but my son is dangerous. Under the right conditions, I truly believe he could kill again with as little compunction about it as he has for what he did to Ella." Despite standing by Paris for years, despite his unthinkable act and his continued violence and malice toward her, it seems Charity has finally given up. According to her Facebook page, "I completely walked away from my eldest child and have not looked back. It is one thing to be a child who makes horrible decisions. It is another thing altogether to be a 27-year-old man and keep making decisions that put your family at risk. The final straw was learning that he was involved with a woman who lived 2 hours away from us and was out on bond for planning a mass shooting. Boundaries had been crossed too many times. I bought a gun, learned to shoot. I am really good now," and said goodbye. "I finally accepted it is okay to love him as my son, but really dislike the man he has become." Paris asked Piers Morgan, "I did commit a monstrous crime, but does that one mistake define my entire life? I don't think it does." Paris Lee Bennett is scheduled to be released in 2047. He'll be eligible for parole in 2027. That's it for today, y'all, and for a few weeks. Trigger Warning will be taking a break until October. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, Dimes.